This is the Mystery Stone Podcast, here to talk about spirituality, metaphysics, philosophy, and everything under the sun when it comes to that. Or the moon, depending on what you like. I am your host, CJ, here with...
The Great Mike.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
That title, it's what I'm talking about.
Hey, man, most humble way possible.
last episode, we laid down some foundational work for the major religions, and that gives us a precedence to build upon that, where we can start moving into more metaphysical ideas, spirituality, and magic in itself. If you guys have a special request, you want to know more about a specific religion, we plan on getting more in-depth with individual religions later on in the future, but if you have a specific one you'd like to hear about, go ahead and email us at mystery.stone.podcast@gmail.com or message us on Instagram, mystery.stone.podcast@instagram, and let us know, hey, I'd like to hear about this, and we can try to figure out a way to work it in there and really give you more information on where you'd like to hear about that. But today, we're going to give you a little bit of a magical insight, finally. We're going to start moving into that, and we're going to talk about Western esotericism.
Yeah, so today we're going to be speaking primarily about esoteric and occult orders, or fraternities, and things along those lines. And these things are, I guess, as like a basic understanding of them, they are schools or initiatory structures that have formed over the years, and even going back to like ancient Egypt and most likely prior to that too. And they're essentially like institutions or orders based upon either occult philosophies, religious scriptures, holy texts, or just spiritual traditions across history. And they're almost like mystic initiation schools where you go through, like I was saying, like a series of initiations. You do much practical work. A lot of these orders are temple-based or group-based. And you go to a place, and there's a lot of dramatic rituals, and there's a lot of practices that you're given. And you do these practices, and essentially it starts to harmonize elements within your soul, your being, your mind, your psychology, and you start to elevate your consciousness and learn how to control the faculties within yourself and your mind. And pretty much to some degree, I mean, overall, you're constructing a better vehicle in order to start doing mystic work or occult work or any type of ritual work where you're harnessing energies so that these things don't either harm you or so you have a better way to understand how to harness them or even how to execute them properly. Without a lot of these initiatory structures, a lot of things of magic or a lot of rituals and things can be done improperly, and this is pretty much like the schooling, I guess you could say, along a magical path that will assure you a lot more success and a lot more safeguard along the way.
All right. When we get into some of these different orders, is that what we want to call that, orders?
Yeah, we could call them, fraternities. Some are fraternities, but I guess we could say orders overall, just as a general statement.
Yeah. Some are inclusive, some are kind of segregated.
Yeah. Some are group and some are kind of consultation across, you know.
Throughout the episode, we're going to come across two different terms on occasion. We're going to come across the term mystic and we're going to come across the term magician. And I feel at this point it's probably a good idea to define those two terms so that we don't get any sort of confusion when it comes to that. Mike, how would you define mystic?
Well, I guess the way I could define mystic, I would start at the root word, like mysticism, to some degree, and that would be any type of spiritual practices or rites that would allow oneself to transcend oneself and come in contact in unity with the divine or God or any type of spiritual hierarchies and those things. So you're connected more so to the divine, and you've opened up that gate, and you've allowed the floodgates of truth to descend, or you're able to tap into things that the ordinary person just simply wouldn't be able to because they haven't gone through the training or they don't know the ways to do so.
Would you say then that when we use the term mystic, we're kind of talking about the source of prophecy?
Yeah, prophecy can be involved there. There's divining that can be done. Mystics can divine things. Mystics are essentially kind of like they've like kind of put up the antenna in their mind that can receive the transmission from divinity or like a higher source or their higher self. So they're able to channel that stuff into the actual physical world or manifest into the physical world. And that's essentially what a mystic would be. You could find them across various religions, traditions, you know, occult orders, occultism, this and that, whatever you want to call it. You can just find them all over the place. There's various different types, and there's various different functions that they perform. And, you know, it's not like that's only what it is, but that's essentially what a mystic is.
Okay, and then how would a magician differ from a mystic?
A magician, as far as I would know, these two terms to be differentiated, is they actually have similarities as well. A difference could be found when a magician isn't involved in mysticism. Which, granted, like the previous definition, you could say that maybe like a black magician or a baneful magician or somebody who's practicing magic that's not of the higher self or not using divination or doesn't really necessarily care about a union with God and these types of things. So in that sense, that's different from mysticism in that there's no objection to unite with God or any type of higher thing like that. Instead, they're using things for this, you know, like a selfish end or things to benefit their own self. So that's a primary difference. But there are a lot of things. There are a lot of paths in occultism and a lot of right-hand paths, you would call them, or theurgy, astrotheurgy, which involves pretty much everything under the sun involving mysticism. So there's parallels and there's also contrasts.
Okay. So then would it be safe to say or fair to say that a magician practices craft but not necessarily with devotion?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, they might be devoted to a cause, but in terms of like, you know, spiritual devotion, stuff like that, or like a higher end or you know, attainment of their higher self or unity with whatever you consider as God or the universe and stuff like that, that's sometimes not the prominent, you know, mode of action. So that would be a difference for sure.
I mean, I feel like we've done a pretty good, like a broad, it's somewhat vague. And with further research, you can really get more into that. We could have... I know we say this like every episode. We can really dedicate an entire episode to these two things.
Yeah.
But we're here to talk about Western esotericism. We just needed to give you that because we're going to be using these terms at different times. And for what these different orders and fraternities and groups do, it's important to understand that there is a difference, that there is similarities as well. But we need to... These are two separate terms. They're not one and the same. And that's what we're shooting for there.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these groups can be involved in Western esotericism. And there's also a lot of groups that are widespread that you'll also hear about today as well. Some I'm sure you'll be familiar with, or maybe not. But other than that, it all goes under the term of esotericism, which I guess at its basic definition would just be like knowledge that a small group of people have. It kind of sounds like pretentious to some degree, the actual definition, but you know, the way it's used in magic or the occult or, you know, philosophy and stuff like that is just, it's just knowledge that takes a long time for people to gain, or truths and insights that are, you know, transcend the mundane knowledge that not a lot of people have or even strive or care to have, which is fine.
Yeah, there's a group that we will be talking about today that had this really interesting viewpoint where they said the universe withholds its knowledge until you're ready to receive it, which I feel is the least pretentious thing. Like, that's a very humble thing, like, if you really think about it, where...
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm ignorant because the universe hasn't determined me worthy of that yet. I feel like that's a pretty humble, non-egotistical way of looking at that. Like, I gain this knowledge that I currently have, but there's more to be had, and I'm not ready.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like the universe contains an infinite amount of signs pointing towards the divine. You know, but you just have to have the right type of mind or the right type of care to actually look around you and analyze the certain patterns that make up everything, to be able to intuit, you know, the virtues of all the things that surround you, how everything interconnects. And it takes a lot of effort, persistence, and it's like a calling to some degree. And it's okay if people don't strive to do these things. Like, not everybody should be involved with this stuff, because this stuff is kept hidden by nature for those who can see things, because there's a lot of harmful damage that can be done by people who are irresponsible with that. And you should view these things as divine and as like essential tools of the universe to either help out humanity or, you know, just to see the bigger picture in a different way so things don't appear as much as the illusion that they actually are. But it is definitely good to transcend the mind at least a little bit, because you start to see the world a little differently. You start to shatter a lot of illusions and you start to view things with clarity and less confusion, which, you know, gets rid of a lot of the chaos and disorder in the world. So, but that's, you know, so it's on another thing.
There's one last term that I really want to go over, which I feel like is going to crop up here quite a bit. For the new people out there, can we define what is the right-hand path?
Yeah, so the right-hand path is the term that is used for quote-unquote like white magic or, you know, areas that are more so unity with divine, like we were saying, or with God, or put, you know, doing things to better the self so that mankind or those around you can benefit as well. It's kind of like a holistic path, whereas the left-hand path is pretty much pure selfish. It's only for the self. It's only to empower the self, only to gain powers for the self and to elevate the self by whichever means you can do so. You know, you're empowering yourself on the right-hand path so that you can power the world as well and elevate it, you know, along with you. But, you know, left-hand path is more personal. And there's a lot of, you know, magic on the left-hand path that it's okay, like causing harm or, you know, just they're just two different ways of going about things. But there's also different traditions in the left-hand path that can be viewed as good. There's ways to go down quote-unquote darker paths or using quote-unquote lesser beings and maybe transform your mind in a certain way and without causing harm to other people. So, you know, it gets kind of confusing. But the basic term, right-hand path, betterment of self for the betterment of the world and benefit of the soul, and the left-hand path, just pure selfishness.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's about that, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty good to define that as well, because a lot of these orders, they really emphasize being on the right-hand path, especially within Western esotericism.
For sure, yeah. Okay. At least it would fall along those lines, but yeah.
Yeah, so what are we talking about first?
Yeah, so the first topic we're going to speak about today, which, you know, we say this a lot during the first episodes, but I'm not going to say it again for the rest of this podcast in specific, that a lot of these orders we're talking about right now may or may not hold their own episode in the future, because there's just so much history to a lot of these things, a lot of these orders, that it's impossible to cover everything about every order in one episode without dragging on forever. So, you know, we're going to touch upon a lot of the main orders that have existed. Not every single one of them. There's so many of them out there. But we're going to, you know, hit on a lot of the primary ones that exist or have existed. And, you know, give a little brief overview of what's involved with it and what they're about. And give you guys just kind of like a brief survey of a lot of these orders. So maybe if you guys are interested in them, you can, you know, check out your own research for more, or else, you know, in the future, we might have one specifically for some of these. But yeah.
It's really, it is important for us to have these broad foundational overviews, because there is by no means any best tradition. There's no, this is the one you need to be. This is really to give you an idea. If it's something catches your interest, you want to learn more, maybe what you believe falls in line with them and you didn't realize that is, this could potentially help guide you down your own path in the future. And just give you a little insight.
Yeah. Yeah. Like these introductory episodes are foundational episodes where we lay upon foundations of various aspects, and we'll start dissecting them more and more and more, into different rudiments and, branches in the future. So we figured that'd be the best way to go about teaching or enlightening people on certain ideas. But yeah, coming back to the question, the first group we're going to be speaking about today, which isn't necessarily considered a quote-unquote an occult order, but it can, because there's occult orders within it. And this is a widespread one that's caused a lot of controversy, and most likely everyone's probably has heard about it by now, which has been made extremely popular by the whole Illuminati conspiracy. And that is the Freemasons, or in specific, Freemasonry. This is a group that's been around for a long time. There's been ideas about this group dating back hundreds of years ago. The first Grand Lodge was established in 1717 in England. And later on, it was established in America, in Philadelphia, in 1730. And some of the one of the founders of that lodge in Philadelphia was Benjamin Franklin, which is interesting because he was, you know, the quote-unquote founding father of America. But if you actually know the past, it's a lot more crazier than that. But nonetheless, there's a lot of famous people who've been involved in Freemasonry across time. And it's one of the biggest groups that's around today. You can find probably find a Freemason lodge somewhere in your city, somewhere locally, somewhere around. They're kind of hidden in plain sight if you don't really know what to look for. They have so many members across the world. It's one of the biggest organizations. It's a fraternity. It's all men. But there is a group in Freemasonry, Order of the Eastern Star, I believe it's called, you know, where women are allowed, they have their own, women are allowed in, and also men too there. But yeah, so that's one separate group for women. And it starts off with, there's the Blue Lodge. When you start to get into the Blue Lodge, or the, you know, in the Masonic temples around, the Blue Lodge deals with 3 degrees. The first three degrees of Freemasonry. The first degree, I believe, is Entered Apprentice. The second is Fellow Craft. And the third is Master Mason. And this order deals with a lot of, like, you could say, like, esoteric or occult knowledge, but it's also about the betterment of the self. You know, virtue, striving toward virtue, priorities. Just living a virtuous life and bettering of the self. And as you get higher in degrees, you know, you start learning more about esoteric concepts. You start learning more about hidden things about the Bible. They actually use a Bible as their primary book for teaching.
It's actually kind of crazy that you bring that up. Mm-hmm. They have a series of things. Like you said, there's no women, mm-hmm. but they do have an open scripture within each of the temples. But discussion of religion and politics is banned.
Oh, really? You can't even talk about politics, right?
Nope.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, and one of the, what all you need to do in order to join this group, essentially, you know, if you're accepted in, is you have to just have a belief and a higher power. That's it. Doesn't matter what religion you come from. You don't have to be a Christian. But there's a later branch in Freemasonry called the York Rite, where you do have to be a Christian to advance in those degrees. But that's after the initial three blue degrees laws that lodge. The initial three degrees in the Blue Lodge. You can apply for that. There's a Scottish Rite, which goes up to the 33rd degree, which is an honorary degree. But other than that, you know, you can attain the 32nd degree without putting crazy amounts of time or money into the group. There's many, many branches. There's a Royal Arch. There's the Shriners. There's so many different branches, and there's so many different activities to do. They do a lot of charity work and Freemasonry. A lot of people have the wrong idea of what it is on the surface. I mean, what they do behind the scenes, or like the elites or the tops and this and that, you know, power does corrupt humanity, and humanity corrupts a lot of things. But the essential goal of Freemasonry, as far as I know, is just to better the self, to grow spiritually, to put a lot of virtue in your life, become a better person for society, and, you know, learn the deeper meanings and truths behind the sacred scriptures and sacred truths.
They do have, across all of their orders within Freemasonry, one solid goal. The goal of the Freemasons is to reconstruct the Temple of Solomon within Jerusalem.
Yeah, and their mythology that they use in Freemasonry is about this man named Hiram Abiff. And I believe they mention him in the Bible, but they made their own story based around this guy. It involves him, and, you know, there's three ruffians, and the ruffians attempt to kill him, or they do kill him, and then I think there's, like, some type of resurrection type of thing. I'm not 100% with this, you know, I don't know the in-depths of the story like that, but it revolves around the central figure, and there's a lot of teachings that they teach you throughout the story and mythology. They don't worship this guy or anything like that, that's to my knowledge, or any of that stuff, but that's the mythology they use, is Hiram Abiff.
Yeah, the whole concept of rebuilding the Temple of Solomon is horrifying to a lot of people, because within the Book of Revelations, that's the signal of the end times.
Mm.
So, after the Temple of Solomon is built, the first horn is supposed to sound. I believe that's how that story goes.
Yeah, I know. I'm really too fond of it. I don't really know that story too well, personally.
I could be wrong, but I think that's how that one goes. I know for a fact that the day the Temple of Solomon is rebuilt is the first sign of end times. The what do you want to call that?
The apocalypse.
The rapture is supposed to happen shortly thereafter.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, the whole building of the temple can also be parallel to also building of our own temple, our own inner temple, which is a huge thing. The Holy of Holies, the inner shrine. And just building that temple within, you know, to be sturdy, to be lofty, you know, and to be, you know, as divine as possible and as virtuous as possible. And, you know, Freemasonry, it means, like, you know, free building. If you're a Mason, you're a builder. And you're free to do that in any way that you want to do it. It's a very personalized path. So there's not one way to go about doing Freemasonry. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting organization. If you're ever interested in it, you know, aside from all the conspiracies you've heard out there, you know, that you can probably find a lodge nearby. You can find websites about it. It's one of the biggest organizations, you know, hidden in plain sight that we have. And there's been so many famous people involved in this group. There's a lot of people in power who are involved in this group, you know, whether for good or bad, that's a whole other thing. But some of the famous members of the past, like I said, included Benjamin Franklin, who else? George Washington, Mozart, Mark Twain, and just various other presidents. So it's George Washington, you know, like you can see him in the Masonic apron and outfit and various pictures. It's just an ancient, widespread organization. It's very fascinating. But yeah, that's about it for I have for Freemasonry. I don't know if you have anything different that you know about this.
Yeah, just one more thing. When it comes to their tiers, you can tell they can tell the difference between an apprentice, a journeyman, or a master based on specific sets of words they use and sigils.
That's right. Yeah, sigil work handshakes, right?
Yeah, sigil work is also super important to them, which I personally found very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. They have so many symbols that you learn that they all mean various different things, and they're all relevant to, you know, the person's character or the betterment of the self or something spiritual. There's so many symbols involved in this group.
Yeah, and most of them involve something that is involved in masonry, like hammers and stone and various things. Very interesting concept.
Yeah, it's like they take like symbols that even the bee or the hive, you know, or you know, they can something that's mundane or something that they do or the tributes that the bees have can correlate to, you know, being a hard worker in real life, or they have you know, just like various symbols or tools that an actual stonemason back in the day would use to build a building, which would correlate not only to a mundane concept but to a more transcendental spiritual concept that you can use toward elevating your consciousness or spirit. So yeah, it's a very interesting way to grow the self. Deals with terrestrial things and the spirit. So that's what it was in foundation. I mean, what people have done with the conspiracies they say and this and that, all the bad things, all this, you know, I'm not sure, but that's what it really was meant to be in its origin. And that's what it still is today, especially, you know, with how it is with the ordinary members. So yeah, that's about it for Freemasonry. Next group I'd like to speak about is one I really appreciate, and it's one of the most influential groups and orders that we've had to date involving esotericism and the occult. It was started by William Westcott, William Woodman, and Samuel Little McGrather Meg. I messed his name up. Samuel Little McGrather Mathers. And Samuel Mathers, he had a long legacy. He had conflicts with Aleister Crowley, and he even taught Aleister Crowley before all that stuff. But that's a whole other topic. This was established in Great Britain in 1887. Actually, was disbanded in 1903. It was one of the most influential groups of all time involving the occult, and it influenced many, many groups we have today. A lot of the groups that we have today got a lot of ideas and rituals from this group and made it their own.
To give you an idea of those groups, that includes Wicca.
Yes. And, yeah, that's a big one.
And Thelema, I think is how you pronounce that word.
Oh, Thelema.
Thelema.
Yeah, Thelema. Yeah, that was a religious.
You can tell I learned that word by reading.
Yeah, I've heard about Thelema. I have the Book of Allah, and the Book of Allah was written by Aleister Crowley, channeled to him through, I believe, this being called Iwas in the Egyptian temple. This is kind of like digressing, but it's interesting. Aleister Crowley, we'll speak about him in depth in the future, but the prominent magician Aleister Crowley was actually in the Pyramid of Giza with his wife, I believe. And, you know, after conducting a series of rituals or whatever, he, you know, was in contact with this being called Iwas. And he presented him all this information transcended down from, like, Egyptian gods and all these things that apparently were supposed to be direct transmissions to him. He wrote them all down, which became what we know as today is the Book of the Law. You could look it up. It's extremely popular amongst occult circles, even in esotericism. It's just widely known. And, yeah, so he created this religion called Thelema, and which means will, I believe, in Greek. So, yeah, it, you know, deals with the will, which is an essential thing in magic and practices and stuff like that. But, yeah. Aleister Crowley, coming back to him, he initially joined the Golden Dawn, which originally was called the Golden Dawn. Later, they changed it to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, but that's usually how people know it today. He joined the group, so he was a big influence in the group, and he ended up making a side order that was heavily influenced off of this group, which we'll speak about shortly. But yeah, this is one I really appreciate, because not only was it very monumental, influential in a lot of groups we have today, but it's kind of like Egyptian based. Like, they deal with a lot of ancient, like, Egyptian gods, and there's a lot of like a salutations to the sun, and you do like a lot of learning through the Egyptian pantheon, which, you know, they have the actual, they use based on the spiritual truths that these things are meant to present, and not some like literary thing that actually exists as the Egyptian gods that, you know, a lot of people think that they actually viewed these things as real, like in their actual form.
Little interesting bit of trivia too. The three founding members were also Freemasons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were Freemasons. Coming back to the initial thing we said. So yeah, you can see how Freemasonry is extremely prominent and widespread. There's a lot of Freemasons. Like, and the thing that's cool about Freemasonry is you can be involved in certain other orders and still be a Freemason. Like, you don't need to only be a Freemason, and it doesn't matter what religion you are. You could be any. This group in particular, as well as many others, it focuses on the practices of theurgy and spiritual development. Now, speaking about theurgy, as we had so many times, that's something I'm more inclined to be involved with. And that's just kind of like right-hand path involvement, attaining with the divine, you know, all the things we've said before about the right-hand path. I'm just going to say the right-hand path just as like a summary, so you guys know what theurgy might be involved with, instead of going into all these details that have already been said. So it focuses on like a higher path, you know, getting involved with your higher self, transcending yourself. It has many, many, many different practices that you go. There's a series of degrees, series of initiations, dramatic rituals that you can get involved with. The original Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn had temples set up where it was a group initiations, and groups would meet up at these places. And depending on if they're doing initiations, then they go through these rituals where there's officers in the building, and they use effects and symbols and sounds and all types of different things to transmit to the mind, the conscious and the subconscious, various virtues and ideas about the universe or truths or how to access certain things within. So it's very interesting work. And a lot of these orders we're going to talk about deal with the exact same type of structure.
Yeah. They have a very similar structure as well to Freemasonry. And there actually is a very large difference between the Golden Dawn and Freemasonry, where in the Golden Dawn, women are equal to men.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, like anybody can join.
Yeah.
The Golden Dawn. Yeah.
I did see that we have three tiers as well, just like the Freemasons. There's the Hermetic Kabbalah, the Inner Order, which focuses on scrying, astral travel, and alchemy.
Mm.
And the Secret Chiefs, who are basically the management people, and they command via communication with spirits.
Well, yeah, these things, there's different sections to the order, and you'll find this across many orders as well. Like, you know, I don't want to keep saying it, but there are a lot of parallels that we find a lot across these orders, because these types of structures do really work very well. But yeah, in a lot of groups, there's an outer order, and the outer order is, you know, people who are limited to a certain, you know, concepts, structures, practices. You know, they're kind of like, you consider these people like neophytes, and neophytes in these organizations are like, you know, newcomers, novices. So they're limited in their potential, their ability, and their practice and what they're allowed to know. And then you have inner orders, and the inner orders, you've transcended certain things, and now you're in a higher degree, and you learn deeper things, and you're able to do deeper things. And so, yeah, and the secret chiefs, these were people that the founders, I think even more specifically, Samuel McGregor Mathers, said he was affiliated with. And these secret chiefs, apparently, you know, the story goes that they handed him this, a lot of this type of knowledge to be handed down into the group and to elevate these people. So he was in cooperation with these guys, or these spiritual entities, or whatever they may be. There's even some stories that they are actual physical people on the planet. But, you know, the way it sounds, it seems like it was like a, supposedly a spiritual hierarchy of entities. But yeah, so, and I guess the people who were really deep into the group eventually had access to them. But, you know, it's a very interesting concept, what these higher entities were, if they even existed. But yeah, it's about that. Mm-hmm. A group I want to touch upon briefly also is the Ordo Templi Orientis. This is the next one, the OTO. And this was founded in 1903 by Karl Kellner, Heinrich Klein, Franz Hartmann, and Theodor Roos. And this is actually a pretty monumental group. It was heavily influential. Once more, the legendary Aleister Crowley, which I can't wait to elaborate on this guy in the future. He's a fascinating guy.
I have a feeling that that's going to be like a 2 or 3 part episode. There's so much with that guy.
Yeah, he's influential.
The different people that interacted with him.
Yep.
He was everywhere.
He was everywhere, and he influenced a lot of music to date. You know, he was a genius. You know, there's a lot of bad rap he had. He did a lot of, you know, questionable or things that are definitely taboo, but he provided a lot of genius work in the area of the occult metaphysics.
I really like the way you put that, because a lot of people were like, that dude was dirty.
Yeah, which he did do some weird things, but if you actually study into him, you know, I don't want to get too much into him, but he provided, I'm very, very thankful he ever existed for the idea that he provided so much to the occult metaphysics. He was a genius. If you read some of his stuff or any of his stuff, he knew various languages. He knew how to interpret so many different things. He translated so many different books into English. And he was a genius, regardless of certain choices he made or whatever, or certain labels he gave himself. Anyway, yeah, but yeah, he was a member of Ordo Templi Orientis as well. And he was like the most influential member of the order. And of course, as CJ said earlier, his religion, Thelema, he eventually ended up reforming this order to revolve around Thelema, which, you know, ended up being like his primary thing in his life. Primary ideas came from his religion of Thelema. And in this group, just a couple more things. I don't want to touch upon it too much because, you know, it existed, it was prominent, and then it was pretty much disbanded. I think offshoots of it still exist today, but, you know, the question of if the lineage is genuine or literally comes from the original is very highly questionable. But, you know, sex magic was a huge teaching in the school. Sex magic deals with, you know, the orgasm and the sexual energy and how to utilize that energy as a power and a force to manifest certain things or to access the subconscious or just, you know, magical practices and to create change and just honing that sexual energy to achieve whatever ends, you know. It sounds like a weird idea, but if you really think about it, and you get out of the structure of society, it, you know, the sex force is extremely huge and prominent within humans, and, you know, it dictates a lot of our choices, whether we're conscious of it or not.
That's across the animal kingdom altogether.
Yeah.
It really takes us back to, like, our primal instinctual nature to procreate.
Yeah, it's a universal force. You can use it for good, you can use it for bad. So, just like anything else. So, sex magic was a huge thing in that school, and like every other order that I believe that we're going to be speaking about, it was also initiatory-based. There's initiations, there's degrees, I think there's like dramatic rituals and stuff and temples that they used. So yeah, that's a little tidbit about the OTO, which is another prominent group. When we were speaking about the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and we were talking about Aleister Crowley, he eventually quarreled with McGregor. I can never say this dude's name right. Sorry, guys. But yeah, Samuel McGregor Mathers. He quarreled with this guy. One day, I promise, I'll get this dude's name right. But yeah, he eventually quarreled with him, had like a power power quarrel with him within the Hermetic Order or the Golden Dawn, which eventually led to the group disbanding. There's a lot of chaos within. You know, that was one of the big reasons why it disbanded. But there's also a lot of quarrels between people and the politics and this and that. But Aleister Crowley went on to make his own occult order, which was called the AA, or the Argentium Astrum, which is Latin for Silver Star. And he formulated this in 1907. Pretty much a few years later after the Golden Dawn was disbanded. And he took a lot of influence from the Golden Dawn, but he also heavily influenced, the AA based off of the Lima and stuff like that.
There was also involved with that Theravada Buddhism, Vendamatic Yoga, I think is how you pronounce that, and lots of ceremonial magic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, those names are freaking hard to talk about, you know what I mean?
If anybody listens to the other show that I'm on, we have well established that CJ is awful at pronouncing words, and I do apologize if anybody took offense to that. It's going to happen a
yeah.
lot.
Yeah, there's a lot going on here, you know, like, he might be bad at saying certain concepts. Apparently, I'm bad at saying names, so, you know, we're just going to keep going with it. It's all good, but yeah.
The biggest thing that I thought was super interesting about this group was their goal was the advancement of humanity through perfecting the individual, and that their methods fall under the Kabbalistic Tree of Life.
Yes. So in terms of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, this glyph, if nobody is privy to what that is, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, I would highly invite you guys to, you know, just look it up on Google. Just put in Kabbalah. One of the prominent spellings is Kabbalah, or the Tree of Life glyph. And you'll see this little glyph come up with 10 circles on it and some lines connecting the circles. And this glyph right here comes from Jewish mysticism, and the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and its practices and everything that entails is one of the most influential glyphs in the history of religion, spirituality, and especially the occult. You can find this outlined or as a structure in most occult orders that I know of. So yeah, just so you guys have like a little, you know, like a little like mental idea as to what that looks like, or you know, if you're interested in it, that's what it is. So they use the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and the Kabbalah a lot, in a lot of these groups and in the AA. Of course, in the Silver Star Order, the primary holy book was the Book of the Law, which I just briefed. Like I said, was transmitted to Crowley, and evolved like a syncretic system of initiations, and assimilated various other structures into the group. Like a lot of these groups, you know, it's like some of the things CJ had mentioned that they involve. They're kind of like a composite structures in that they take a little bit from here and a little bit from there from various traditions, and they accumulate into one quickening path for the soul and the mind to ascend as best as you can through a series of degrees. So like a lot of these things aren't necessarily original in the things that they use. But they're original in the structure that's provided. But one of the primary aims was the research and practice and the teachings of scientific illuminism. It also had a lot of degrees, initiations, and all the things that we spoke about with other orders too. I don't want to get too repetitive, but just to give you guys like keep reiterating the concepts, like how these groups really kind of operate. But yeah. And another thing I should mention is one of the key purposes of this group, as well as even in magic in general, one of the most important and lofty concepts you can do or attain is this thing called the knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel. And there's a really, really good book out there called The Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage. And in this book, it outlines one of the best, quickest ways and most devoted ways to attain this through the magical path. So yeah, there's many ways you can go about doing this, but it's a really serious thing to attain. It's really, really important. Once you attain this, your consciousness expands a lot. You allow your higher self to pretty much take control and possess your actual body. The ego is disintegrated. You're pretty much just an elevated being after that, in which, you know, magic after that becomes much more easier to practice. You're in tune. You're in touch with a lot of things more harmoniously. You're in tune with a lot more things in the divine realm. Are a lot more accessible. So yeah, that's one of the central objectives, is the knowledge and conversation of the Holy and Guardian Angel. And if you're any type of researcher or practicer in the occult, I'm sure you might have come across that concept. But yeah, so that's all I pretty much have off the top of my head for this group in specific. I'm not sure.
That's pretty much what I have too.
yeah. That's actually a group I was always interested in back in the day. Their logo is like this, like 7-point star. It's a nice logo, mm-hmm. But it's also a very interesting group. I don't know. I was always drawn to that group in specific. I guess the next group we can talk about would be Rosicrucianism, or that general area.
Is that how you pronounce that one?
Yeah, it's Rosicrucianism. Yeah.
Rosicrucianism.
Yeah, I've always been attracted to this one. This one as well too. Yeah.
I did when I was reading about it. Mm-hmm. I did think it was very, very interesting. I've actually never heard of them until we talked about doing this.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So I'm actually getting exposed to a lot of things that I've never seen or heard of before, which is super exciting for me. So if anybody is listening to us right now going, wow, like, this is a lot, and I'm new, and...
It is a lot, yeah.
I personally am with you. So I understand, and definitely do your own research or rewind and listen to us again.
Yeah, I'm personally like really passionate about these things. I've been involved in the study and practices of a lot of things for a long time. So if I'm talking more here and there, I have a lot of experience with these things. I've studied so many different things. I have so many books. Like, it's kind of like my life. So I do fill in a lot of the grays with a little bit of detail here and there, but yeah, it's very fascinating stuff, and it's been a life path for me. But if I do get things wrong, well, you know, I'm perfect, but I'm providing you guys with the best knowledge that I have so you guys can understand this stuff better.
I really thought the fact that they're a spiritual, they identify as a spiritual and cultural movement of the 17th yep. century.
Yeah.
Rather than being like an order or a fraternity, they're a movement.
Yeah, it was initially a movement, and then order spawned out of it. I'm not sure if you know about like the origins of this, of Rosicrucianism.
Nope. Specific,
yeah, it's actually interesting. In Germany, I believe around 16, I'm trying to go based off of memory, like 1612 or 1614, around there, there was this mysterious book that was put out into the wild, into the public. It was called the Fama Fraternitatis. And this was the first book in a series of three manuscripts that were put out mysteriously, detailing, like, pretty much philosophies for a future reform of civilization and the world under, like, these mystic ideas. And Rosicrucianism in itself, at its foundation, is a mystic Christianity group. And it deals with the ideas of the Christ, of Jesus, in like a mystical sense, as if he's like an adept. We'll go over what an adept is, but as if like the Christ is a central figure in the teachings of Rosicrucianism. But it's mystical. It's not like a literary read the Bible. It's literal. No, but they have, you know, their own series of guidelines and virtues and just reforms for society. And so you had the Fama Fraternitatis that came out, and then you had two other manuscripts that came out mysteriously. I believe they were called the Confessio Fraternitatis, and then the Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreutz. And so Christian Rosenkreutz became the central mythological figure in Rosicrucianism when it first came out in Germany. And Christian Rosenkreutz, you know, the story is very mythological, the way it's prescribed. Like, this guy was supposedly the founder of the Rosicrucian order. It's heavily debated who actually was. Some claim that Sir Francis Bacon was involved, other prominent people at the time, but there's never an official who put these documents out. But But yeah, so Christian Rosenkreutz was like this guy who pretty much was the one enlightening the world and society about this order and what's to come and what to expect. Outlined the, you know, the brotherhood of people, just various things. I don't have like all the details in my head. But yeah, so these three manuscripts in the 1600s in Germany is what started this whole Rosicrucianism movement. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about the generalities about Rosicrucianism before I get into the orders. We got some thunder out there, guys.
Yeah.
Damn, yeah, okay.
We're bringing that energy.
Yeah, okay.
What's up?
The universe is responding here, huh?
I'll take it. Right. Along with the Christian mysticism, they also combine in their Kabbalah, Hermeticism, and an emphasis on alchemy.
Yeah. Yeah, so it uses, like CJ said, like a lot of mystical practices to their ends.
Then a lot of their origins are, like you said, within the Egyptian Brahmanic, I believe is how I pronounce that word. Brahma.
Yeah, that's like, it's like the Hindu.
Right.
The Hindu, creator.
The mysteries of the Eleusis and Samoth race.
Mm.
The magi of Persia and the Pythagoreans and Arabs.
Yeah, my man Pythagoras.
Yeah, they really...
Huge fan. Huge fan.
I love his triangles.
Yeah. It's all people know about it.
Right.
For the most part, this triangle.
They also took a very heavy influence from Freemasonry.
Yeah, I could totally see that. It just deals with the same type of concept, just in a different way, and with different types of structures and people and mythologies that they use to teach it and stuff like that.
I'd like to emphasize that stuff because it really shows a link where we have these beliefs and you can link them to that. And even though it's not necessarily the same, we are still human and we're one, but many. Hey, you know what I mean?
I guess it's kind of like looking at like a puzzle, but there's all these pieces making up the puzzle picture. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and instead of being like a traditional puzzle, it looks more like a spider web.
Yeah, this like internal spider web.
Like an organized one, though. It looks disheveled.
It does look disheveled.
When you get underneath it, there's order.
There's a lot of order. Yeah, so it's fascinating. That's a very metaphysical concept, yeah. Involving Rosicrucianism, I believe that they would probably most likely use the Christian Kabbalah, which usually you spell that version of the Kabbalah like K-A-B-B-A-L-E-H. There's various different adaptations that spiritual groups and orders have used with the original Kabbalistic tree of life, you know, that Cliff had spoken about earlier.
Yeah, and this is, I think this is the first one in this episode where we really emphasize that they are into alchemy, which is a science that's been going on forever. As long as humans valued precious metals, we've been trying to take ones that aren't so valuable and turn them into gold. And fairly recently, we pulled it off.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't know what the ancient alchemists do. I mean, there's alchemists. Mm-hmm. There's alchemists today that deal with the same thing.
Well, but we actually, in a scientific setting, turned not lead but beryllium into gold.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They used a photon cannon and fired a particle at a sheet of beryllium, and when inspecting the beryllium, they found gold as well. We actually turned beryllium to gold. The downside to that is the cost to do that is way more than the gold. It's actually like it's so exponentially more than the actual particles of gold that were created that it's not even feasible to be doing. But we did it.
Yeah, so okay, we did it now. Let's put it away, dude. Let's put it away.
We figured this one out.
Yeah, next, dude.
But, I mean, they literally packed a particle full of energy and shot it at a metal.
It's crazy, like the potentials that exist.
Which
like,
is a super high-tech way. Like, that's always been the concept, if you really think about it. Like, pack something full of energy and transform it. And people discount things like alchemy as pseudoscience. I heard that when I was doing research for this particular episode, the word pseudoscience came up so much.
Yep.
That's
another problem with this area.
Right. And I was like, I don't feel like this is fair. Even on websites that were promoting these ideas utilize the term pseudoscience. And to be honest with you, I'd really like to see that term go away because it's not fair. Yeah, especially when we take these concepts from back then and we're like, we've been trying to do it, and then we do it. And not only don't do it with the same method, but we do it under the same premise.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like a lot of things are labeled as pseudoscience, which, you know, in retrospect, like, all right, well, certain things might be. But the problem is, like, a lot of people's minds are closed to, you know, other ideas or obtaining things, or we're so, like, locked into, like, narrow-minded vision of society that we've been given today, and we feel like we're so much more advanced than people of the past, even though that's not necessarily true whatsoever, especially those who are entirely intellectual in the past. And it's just a shame that so many people's minds are closed when there's so much potential out there. A lot of this stuff can actually be, you know, an actual path of elevating the self, or actually transmuting an alchemy like base metals into gold. Or I personally can't wait to do an episode on alchemy in the future. I think it's going to be an extremely important one. There's alchemy involved in so many groups. I love alchemy's concept in general, you know, because not only was the alchemical process one of material, but it was also one of spirituality too. They, alongside of transmuting or attempting the transmuting base elements in the gold, and eventually finding the Philosopher's Stone, which is that thing that can turn other things into gold as well. It also dealt with, alongside of that process of the metals, also transmuting your own spirit into a spirit of gold, and to enlighten the spirit within. And so it was a dual process, and it's very interesting how they went about their ends, and it'll take up a whole episode in the future, so I'm looking forward to that one. Getting back to Rosicrucianism in general, Rosicrucianism had spawned various orders and groups throughout the past based on the tenets and teachings of the original Rosicrucian manuscripts. One that you can actually find today is one of the most prominent, probably one of the most prominent orders we have today alongside of Freemasonry, at least in terms of internet presence, is AMORC. And what that stands for is the Ancient Mystical Order of Rosicruci. And that was started in 1915 in California by this guy named Harvey Spencer Lewis. He apparently went to, you know, some place and searched over the Rosicrucians. And, you know, it was a huge craze, a huge obsession amongst many people back in the day, trying to figure out, like, who these people were, like, who are their origins, like, what knowledge do they have, like, you know, like, just trying to find the esoteric knowledge that they had and trying to figure out more about it, because it captivated so many people and intellectuals at the time. So this guy apparently went somewhere, and eventually, I forget where he went, but he traveled far and wide to try to find knowledge on these people, apparently. And eventually, supposedly, like I was saying, got knowledge, came across somebody, this and that. And he was eventually, like, he was given the okay to create his own order. So he eventually did that in San Jose, California. And the teachings, like I was saying, were based off the Rosicrucians. They're based off those of the original Rosicrucians, or the Rosicrucian ideas and the sacred sciences. And AMORC is the largest Rosicrucian order in the world. Interestingly enough, there's actually one I've personally been to, like in person. There's actually a Rosicrucian order in Pennsylvania, and I've been there personally. And it's the actual order is called Fraternitas Rosicruci, and it claims to be the original order in America, which it was. I forget the guy's name who started it, but you can actually find this in Quakertown. In the woods, there's this beautiful property. And on this property, you can find pyramids, beautiful pyramids. There's a bigger one. There's a big pyramid made out of stone, and there's a couple smaller ones. And on the property, there's the Church of Illumination. It's a beautiful property. I'm not going to say anything about their teachings. I don't really know. You know, it's not my judgment to go talk about their teachings in terms of you know, which one to join, which not, you know, what's right or what's wrong. But it's just another order involving Rosicrucianism. I think it originally started in California, but then eventually moved to Pittsburgh. And Aleister Crowley, interesting enough, bring it back to him, he was actually after this order back in the day, because the order was claiming a lot of things that Aleister Crowley wasn't happy about. And the guy who eventually ended up heading the order started putting his own input on the original order's founding guy. He started, like, implementing different things and changing his words a little bit. And so Aleister Crowley wasn't happy about this. So he actually was after this group in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. So that's pretty interesting. I mean, that just shows you, you know, the influence and the widespread just the way that this guy was known, and just how interesting it is that, you know, just being to a place where this guy was after. I don't know, it's just interesting.
It is. It goes back to the idea that many truths are revealed through conflict. I think it was Sun Tzu that said that.
Yeah, my man Sun Tzu, dude.
I think it was him.
I think he wrote the Art of War, right?
The Art of War.
Yeah, that's a nice book. It's a cool book. But yeah, but coming back to Amork, it's the same type of deal, but this one is typically consultation. Like, we're going to be speaking about another group as well that does the same type of thing. But there's a lot of groups you can find online. There's various Rosicrucian orders. There's so many different orders of mystic orders out there. It's impossible to cram it into one episode. But there's a lot of ones you can find online that have their own tenets and ways to go about things. And you can join them, and they send you things in the mail. And these are certain practices that they prescribe to you and that you do. And you send them back. And, you know, you make your payments and this and that. And they send you teachings and all types of things. So if Rosicrucianism and Christian mysticism is of interest to anybody, I'll start out by looking up Amwork online and seeing what they're about. I'm not saying that's the one you should join. But there's various different groups in Rosicrucianism. There's a Rosicrucian Fellowship that was founded by Max Heindel. He actually put out the first book into the public involving Rosicrucianism, of course, after the Three Manifestos. That was extremely comprehensive and is apparently with a lot of knowledge channeled down to him. I've personally read it. It's called The Rosicrucian Cosmoconception by Max Heindel. I believe his last name is spelled H-E-I-N-D-E-L. And the Rosicrucian Cosmoconception speaks about so many intriguing things. It speaks about how everything works, the evolution of humanity, where we're coming, where we came from, where we're going. The Lemurians, which is an ancient apparent race that used to exist here. The Atlanteans that lived on Atlantis. So many different interesting concepts. It talks about the souls of us and the spirit and the souls of minerals and of animals and what governs them, and it pretty much just like an entire conception of the cosmos, like it says in the title. So if one's interested in Rosicrucianism outside of the three Rosicrucian manifestos, which you can also purchase, it's a fascinating read. But I would highly suggest Max Heindel's Rosicrucian Cosmos Conception. It's probably 400 pages of just pure interesting knowledge. It definitely stimulates the mind a lot. But Rosicrucianism, Christian mysticism, great topic. So yeah, that pretty much summarizes it for Rosicrucianism. Like I was saying, it's one that's always been a fascination to me. I personally grew up in a Catholic home, extremely devoted Catholic home. So Jesus was kind of like thrown in my face growing up, and I have a lot of admiration toward the entity of Jesus and the Christ and his story. It's very fascinating. I hold no judgments toward any of that stuff, and I definitely hold a lot of resonation with that character just because it's been instilled in me for so long. So yeah, it's just been one I've always loved and always appreciated. But I guess going in to the next and potentially last order we'll be speaking about during this episode, what's the last one we're speaking of?
Well, this is a true mystery school,
mm-hmm.
and they revolve around the Holy Tarot, but we're going to be talking mm-hmm. about Builders of the Atom.
Yeah, Builders of the Atom. I actually know a couple of people involved with this group, or at least have been involved with the group.
It's pretty easy to get involved with them. They're based out of Los Angeles, and they have a fantastic website that I got all of my information from.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you type any of these groups online, you can find websites, different groups, but just, you know, make sure you're not going to get scammed by anything. But this group is pretty straightforward. It's just them, Builders of the Atom, BOTA.
And what I found most interesting is that it is a genuine mystery school, which up until now, we didn't really talk very much about the beyond that they existed within ancient Egypt. We didn't really talk about modern day ones.
So
I was excited about this one.
The Builders of the Atom deals primarily, I'm pretty sure, based off things I've heard from actual members, that deals primarily with like CJ said, the tarot. I believe that you color in your own cards. It's a lot of personal, like your tarot. You create your own personal tarot deck, and you kind of, the tarot in general deserves its own episode on itself. That's its own topic to go into in depth. But there's a lot of spiritual wisdom in those cards, and not a lot of people know the actual history of it or what they originally meant to be. All we see is just kind of like, you know, just thrown in the shelves and this and that, but they're the extremely game, influential.
The game you play with them is fun, too.
Yeah, there's so many like, little superficial games or even like divining things you can do with them, but it essentially deals with the journey of the Fool, which is the first card of the Major Arcana in that set, and up until Enlightenment. So it's a card tell an extremely deep and philosophical tale of the spiritual person on his journey, with various symbols that are way too deep for the ordinary person. A lot of them I'm not even sure of. There's so much symbolism involved in there. The tarot is a great tool to ascend the mind and the spirit. So yeah, that's what they primarily use. It also was founded, I believe, in 1922. By a prominent magician, some of you might have heard of him, Paul Foster Case. And of course, like some of these other ones, they're stationed in California. So if you guys are in California listening, seems like a great place to be. Because some of the orders that we spoke about today are in California. How convenient.
Yeah, another interesting thing, you actually said it very early on in the episode. They strongly emphasize on the inner shrine and the Holy of Holies.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thinking about that. Builders of the Adytum. The Adytum itself refers to that inner shrine or that Holy of Holies within. And it's kind of like another word of saying, like, I guess, Freemasonry. Builders of the Adytum, you know, like, has the same type of structure, same type of concept involved, like what it means. You know, like, you're the builder of your inner temple. You're the builder of the Adytum. So that's what the name means.
They also recognize the root the Kabbalah has within Judaism and Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, like we were saying earlier, how prominent the Kabbalah is in all these things, and all these groups, and just anything involving mysticism is so essential. So I would prescribe to people and invite them, if they are interested in magic, the occult, or mysticism, as a foundation, definitely check out the Kabbalah. And one of the most essential works ever made on the Kabbalah that I know of is Dion Fortune, who's a female author, who had her own actual order, the Fraternity of the Inner Light. Her work called The Mystical Kabbalah is like one of the most comprehensive books that we have that I know of. It's widely known in esoteric circles, or at least those who read a lot. It contains information about all the Sephiroth, which are the circles on the Tree of Life, and all the pathways that connect them. And she apparently was heavily involved with that and gleaned so much information on it based upon her practical work with that tree. And yeah, so anyone interested, I just highly suggest just research the Kabbalah, because it is so prominent and it's so fascinating. Even if you don't care about magic, it's extremely fascinating. So, and that's another one I can't wait to go in depth on that in the future. But yeah, in terms of the orders, there's so many of the name, like I was saying, and we touched upon some of the prominent ones that exist or have existed. If you guys are interested in Rosicrucianism, like I was saying, there's many orders that are around today. Builders of the Adytum are a group that you can sign up for online.
I forgot one. The big thing, it's crazy because I have it right here. It was like the biggest note that I have.
Yeah.
Builders of the Adytum, their main goal is to spread love and brotherhood as the main truth.
Oh, that's good. Well, it's interesting because, like, a lot of people have this concept that, you know, magic call or any of these psychological, of course, they appear taboo because they're weird and they're different outside of the norm. But a lot of the end goals of a lot of these groups, especially the ones I've spoken about, of course, there's ones like, there's satanic groups, there's dark groups, there's black magic groups, and there's all the other stuff. I don't really have to focus on them in the present right now, but we will in the future. But a lot of these groups that are big and are well known, their foundation is based off of elevating the self, elevating humanity, and working for humanity. It's not all about some crazy selfish need of this and that or whatever, like they're doing some weird stuff to attain some weird, like, of course there's some weird taboo things you consider because it's just not spoken about, or it's not that we're doing this stuff where we see it in mainstream stuff, you know, society. But a lot of the end goals in these groups are for the greater good, not only of the self, but of the rest of the world, which is a hard concept to grasp for a lot of people who don't know much about this stuff. And, you know, I fell victim to that a long time ago, which you know, I don't blame anybody for doing. But, yeah, so love and brotherhood. That's a huge thing in Freemasonry, too. This is all about everyone in Freemasonry is considered a brother, like brother to each other, and they take care of each other. If something's wrong with one of them, you know, there's always the brothers of the Freemasons to help each other out. If they're in need of certain supplies, I've known a bunch of Freemasons, and I speak with a bunch of Freemasons to this day. And they've been nothing but good people to me personally. Of course, there's always bad apples in every group, but it's just about self, just betterment of the self and charity. And the Freemasons' slogan is making good. I think it's making good men better or something along those lines. So, you know, just do some research if interested. And to those who are skeptical of all these things, I understand. But it's way more to it than just some evil demonic stuff that, you know, mainstream has led all these topics to you know, at least lead people to think that it's just all dark. But yeah, that's all I personally have for this topic today.
Yeah, I think we really did a good job here of giving a broad overview of these things. See, again, we're still trying to set down a foundational precedent. We are going to, coming in future episodes, get very, very specific on topics, individual subjects, not multiple orders in one thing. We'll have episodes where, you know, we really define the goal. Now, we might have multiple episodes. We may touch on something now and then come back to it later. The idea is we want to provide as much information as we can. It's such an expansive subject. It's very, very hard to really condense everything. So if you're walking away with questions right now, good.
Yeah, there should be. I mean, even to this day, I got a billion questions in the back of my head. I've been studying involved with this stuff for a long time. So it's such a mysterious, interesting, fascinating area. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you walk away with those questions and then you educate yourself on that, our mission's accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really what we're here to do.
And as always, if there is any questions you guys have you'd like to ask us, our Instagram is mystery.stone.podcast. You know, shoot us a message. And whenever we find the time, you know, we're busy, but whenever we find the time, we will love and be happy to respond to any type of information, help, guidance, or anything you guys want to enlighten us on, or anything that you think that we missed or got wrong, or even, you know, just anything. You know, just message us on there. We'll get back to you when we can. Any other platforms we have, right?
We're pretty much everywhere now. We recently got approved for Spotify, which is awesome. So everybody can reach us on there as well. And then contact-wise, I link everything in the description as well. So if for whatever reason you're like, oh man, I can't remember what the Instagram is, just give it a click. Take you right over there.
But yeah, I really appreciate you guys listening as usual. I hope you guys took away something from this. And I hope it either ignited some type of fire of interest toward any of these topics, or at the very least, you know, enlighten you on something, or at the very least, you know, at least you learn something. So yeah, I really appreciate you guys listening. I appreciate your time. It means a lot to me. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate everybody who listens as well. Definitely. Thanks.
Yeah, so I guess that's about that. I hope you guys have a rest of your day, and take care of yourselves. Yeah. We'll see you next time.
Blessed be.